that chucking away just, you know, vapes that you can't recharge or refill, very bad for the environment. But is there a massive loophole in the government plans that you can now buy vapes that will be rechargeable but not refillable? So you can still buy them and you can still chuck them away after a single use if you wish. Is there a better way? Should we be following Australia and making vapes something you can only buy in chemists or pharmacies? How would that help wean people off tobacco? Give us a call with your thoughts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Defence Secretary says he has no doubt that military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. John Healey has told a newspaper the target is no longer an ambition but a certainty. A major review of the armed forces is due to be published next week. Earlier this year, Sir Keir Starmer laid out plans to increase defence spending to 2.5% by April 2027.
I believe we must now change our approach to national security, so we are ready to meet the challenges of our volatile world. The reason for this is straightforward. Putin's aggression does not stop in Ukraine. Russian spy ships menace our waters.
A government source says the comments made by the Defence Secretary are his opinion and not a new commitment. President Trump says he'll double tariffs on steel and aluminium imports to the United States to 50% on Wednesday. Mr. Trump told a rally in Pennsylvania overnight that the change will protect the domestic steel industry. Two men have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a man died in Exmouth in Devon overnight. Police were called to reports that a man in his 20s had been assaulted at a property in Ashfield Close. The victim was found in a garden and pronounced dead at the scene. A team of international scientists say they've made a breakthrough in the treatment of some head and neck cancers. A trial tested the immunotherapy drug pembrolizumab and found it kept the cancers at bay for 5 years. Tom Harrigan has more details for LBC.
Pembrolizumab, sometimes called Keytruda, is already available on the NHS for patients with certain forms of head and neck cancer. The treatment works by blocking a particular protein in the body, helping the immune system fight the disease more effectively. Experts looked at more than 700 people who'd been given the drug in 24 countries. The cancer returned in half those patients after 5 years. But that's significantly better than the success rate for conventional therapy, where 50% of people saw it come back after 2.5 years.
Disposable vapes will be banned from the shelves of all shops from tomorrow. It's hoped the move will reduce the number of young people vaping and cut down the plastic waste. Rogue traders who continue to sell them risk a fine of £200 in the first instance, followed by potential jail time for repeat offenders. LBC weather: showers continuing in northwestern areas, but dry and sunny elsewhere. Highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Have you ever wondered what becoming a lotto millionaire sounds like?
You want to sit down? I can confirm that you have won £1 million in games.
That's Terry finding out he'd won £1 million.
Yes! Oh my God.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Will you be the next millionaire? Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Matthew Wright.
Yeah, you've got Matthew Wright here serving your breakfast today and tomorrow morning. And we're still inundated with messages and thoughts on middle-class radicals. I guess that's because you're middle-class and you're radical and you don't want to stop. Well, if we can call a temporary cessation to your activities and refocus the mind, because for our final hour together this Saturday morning, I want to really hear your criticism or observations on the government's strategy for vaping, if indeed it is a coherent strategy, because when I look at the latest changes to nicotine vapes coming into, I do wonder. As you're probably aware, disposable vapes are banned tonight, midnight tonight. Hurrah! I hear you cough and splutter. And whilst I don't doubt vaping is infinitely preferable to smoking tobacco, feeding your drug addiction with an electronic machine driven by a lithium-ion battery consuming all manner of rare earth minerals like neodymium, samarium and dysprosium, and then just chucking it on the street or even in a regular bin when you're done, well, it's not right, it's disgusting, it's wrong. And so you'd expect me to cheer government efforts to ban disposable vapes, more than a million of which are chucked away every day, 13 a second. Can you hear any cheering? No, you can't. Because to my astonishment, I learned on LBC last night that while disposable vapes, non-refillable, non-rechargeable, are banned from midnight, there's no such restrictions on vapes that are rechargeable but not refillable. They have a charging port on the side, but no means for the user to put more nicotine vape solution into the device. Now, I loathe conspiracy theories, rabbit holes in which victims waste far too much valuable time, but you could be forgiven, I think, for wondering if a policy change to make throwaway vapes rechargeable, not refillable, that somehow survived two commons readings, examination by a select committee and review by the House of Lords, is something other than a huge oversight. I just don't get it. I mean, the vaping industry, we know, has had plenty of input from big tobacco firms over the years, and the tobacco giants have been lobbying politicians for much, much longer. I don't know. But for starters, I'd love to hear what you make of the UK's crackdown on disposable vapes. If you use vapes, are you going to switch to one of the new non-disposable disposable vapes that cost only a little more than the old disposable vapes? Or are you going to invest in a truly reusable device where the battery unit alone might cost you around, I don't know, 20, 30 quid, but it should last you a good while longer? And whether you vape or not, I suppose, arguably, the most important question is whether you expect the law change banning disposable vapes to have any meaningful effect at all. I mean, we just spoke to a guest in the last hour, a charity campaigner, who thought no. The last 10 or 15 years, I think, has seen a general acceptance that vaping is preferable to tobacco smoking on many levels, and not just health. Australia and New Zealand, I mean, they have really led the world on reducing smoking. And they pushed last year in Australia to make vaping prescription only, which, you know, I can see if you're giving up smoking, you might buy into it. But if you're just thinking about giving smoking and thinking about a switch, I don't know whether that was the right direction of travel. But anyway, they scrapped that at the last minute and instead limited the sale of vapes to pharmacies only, so they're no longer for sale in supermarkets, liquor stores or newsagents. And under 18s down under can only vape with a prescription from their doctor. And again, I wonder, if we want to stop teenage smokers from smoking, would we want to restrict vape access to young people so they had to get a prescription? I think not. But even a quick visit to the respective government health department shows a sort of world of difference in attitude. The information for vapers through the UK government site, it's okay. It's pretty scant compared to the Australian government's pages, which, you know, they do a pretty good job of putting the frighteners on you. They list some of the chemicals vapers will be inhaling: formaldehyde used in industrial glues and for preserving corpses, acetone generally found in nail polish remover, acrolein, commonly found in weed killer, along with heavy metals like nickel and lead, alongside clear warnings to vapors and dual users, those who vape and smoke tobacco, that they still risk lung cancer, heart disease and cancer. I'll be honest, I don't know what the right course of action is. I don't like disposable vapes being chucked on the street because I think they're an environmental catastrophe, but I am still of the mindset that anybody who uses a vape rather than tobacco products is probably doing the right thing, and we should probably make it easier for people to vape safely. That said, also, you've seen loads of you saying, why don't we offer a deposit or refund system on vapes? We used to do it with bottles in the 1970s. Maybe 50p on the price of a vape that you get back when you hand it in. Or maybe Elliot was saying, make the first vape you buy cost £20, and every time, as long as you hand back the vape, your next vape, you just pay for the cost of the machine, no more deposit. There's got to be ways, better ways round for dealing with this. 0345 6060 973 is the number for your thoughts on vape reform, I suppose. Now, in a moment, I'm going to be talking to someone intimately acquainted with what they've been doing down in New Zealand. In fact, both of my guests are intimately acquainted with New Zealand. In a moment, a professor of leadership in healthcare. But first, to one of the original campaigners for the ban on disposables, live from Christchurch in New Zealand, and that's Anna Stewart. Good morning to you, Anna.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been following your adventures online for years, I have to say, and you have done an amazing job on public health, I have to say.
Thank you.
Perhaps before I get your thoughts on where we're going in the UK, you could tell us what the status quo is back home.
Look, it is pretty bad in New Zealand at the moment. We were on track to be a world leader in reducing the smoking and the vaping rates amongst adults and young people. However, we've found with the change of government, with a national-led coalition, that the influence of the tobacco industry has become much more prevalent in New Zealand health policy. That's been really hard to watch as a parent who's seen the first-hand effects of vaping on young people. The challenge around switching to disposable vapes is that it's very easy for industry to adapt to what disposable parameters might be set at. We've seen it in New Zealand. You could quickly, almost immediately, there was new vapes that came into effect the day after those bans came in for New Zealand, which didn't change the price point for young people. You can buy vapes for as little as $5, which is, you know, only a couple of pounds in comparison. There's no online monitoring of online sales. So when regulations change, they will product dump, buy three, get three free. So it didn't have the effect that we were looking for in terms of reducing the supply or the volume of vapes. You'll find they just have click-in batteries now that change that definition from disposable. So what we really have been focusing on since then is understanding the degree of influence that the tobacco industry, which is heavily, you know, funding the vape change. They're obviously looking for a new future generation of people to consume nicotine-based products, and this is the area that they are pivoting to the most. So we've really been campaigning hard to try and expose the extent of that tobacco industry influence, but it has been very hard when we haven't got great regulations here in New Zealand that will actually enable us to do that. And when we come to enforcing the stores that do sell to children, we have it in my city here. They will sell to kids in school uniform, including my own child. So it has been really heartbreaking to watch that change from being a world leader to now being right back where we started.
One of the confusing aspects of the debate is, if you take the view that vaping is better than smoking, there's a sort of inherent, well, I suppose we then start thinking vaping is good. I mean, because it's better than smoking. I think there's a growing awareness that vaping may not be good, even if it is better than smoking. But that sort of intellectual conflict creates confusion.
That's right. Well, that's a little bit like saying a machine gun isn't as bad as an Uzi. You know, about products that have a negative effect on your health, and we're only really just discovering now the potential impacts of vaping. You don't need to vape for a long time to have negative health effects, like you might say for smoking. But at the same time, it can affect different people differently. And, as parents, we've noticed kids that will start coughing, you know, for months at a time just from having vape for a short period of time. So there's lots of unknowns.
Having seen where Australia's gone, having seen the failings in New Zealand, what do you think of the UK's ban on disposable vapes? I mean, in the light of what you've just said, it's kind of as I outlined, it's going to achieve nothing.
I don't think it will. I think you really need to look at what the marketing is behind these products. You'll notice it's very easy to go online and look at tobacco documentation around. They're looking for poly users. They want people that will vape, people that will smoke, people that will use nicotine pouches. They're really not concerned whether you were a smoker previously or not. These aren't therapeutic products, so any suggestion that they do help you quit smoking is actually misleading.
Pleasure talking to you, Anna Stewart. Keep it up as well. Amazing work she's done there. Let's bring in Brian Dolan now, Honorary Professor of Leadership in Healthcare at the University of Salford, but former Director of Service Improvement in Canterbury, New Zealand. Good morning to you, Brian. Nice to see you.
Good morning. I just want to very quickly say I was in Christchurch, and Anna's done some absolutely outstanding work demythologising a lot of the nonsense from the pro-tobacco companies and also the pro-tobacco politicians around them.
She's clearly pretty unimpressed by what we're doing here in the UK, in as much as she's already seen what will happen or what can happen.
Absolutely. I mean, I as you were describing it, in your intro, I remember thinking, geez, it feels like they worked this all out in the back of the UK parliamentary bike shed, because it's not that well through. Now, I do think the environmental thing is not to be dismissed. Right. You know, I think, you know, that's no bad thing. But the price point between the disposables and the rechargeables is so little. And one of the most sensitive indicators of impact on public health is around price points. When you put up the price of alcohol, you put up the price of cigarette, that acts as a deterrent. Now, by the time you're 25, executive function has finally turned in, you know, arrived at the front of your brain. 1% maybe at most people start smoking at that age. These products are targeted at teenagers. That's the point. And it may be safer, but it is not no risk. I mean, we talk about popcorn log now. Thankfully, diacetyl, which gave the buttery flavour to popcorn, that is banned in the UK and the EU. So that's no bad thing, because it leads to this alarmingly titled called a bronchiolitis obliterans, because it literally, you know, you're putting smoke in at 300 degrees. It's superheated smoke into your lungs. Now, how can we even start, say, leaving the chemicals out, that can be safe for younger people?
Which begs the question, then, what should the UK government be doing? I am tempted to ask you, by the way, the oversight on recharge. Let me ask you this first, actually. The oversight on the rechargeables.
Yeah.
It's gone through two Commons readings, a select committee and the House of Lords, and they haven't figured out that a rechargeable, non-refillable vape is still essentially disposable. I mean, is it an oversight or is it something darker?
It strikes me that, you know, if they thought this through, what they would have been targeting is the price point. Make it much, much more expensive.
But then, Brian, and I've already seen the messages, I'll go back to tobacco. And so we get caught in this sort of vicious cycle, and I can't see the way out. So
why are youngsters not smoking in the way they did? It wasn't because of the evidence and all of that stuff. What it was is, if you're 14 or 15, you really don't want to snog an ashtray. It was the social unacceptability of smoking that drove the behavioural shift away from cigarette smoking in younger people. So if we're targeting the behavioural factors rather than the evidence of health, that's the thing. Now, if you're smoking e-cigarettes and you smell a bubble gum, well, that's a bit more attractive than smelling it like an ashtray. And I think that's the bit that may have been missed.
I was a preteen smoker. It was the worst thing I did in my life. It took me a hell of a long time to get off them. And in the end, it was through the Alan Carr course. And I got to know Alan a little bit before he died. Mm-hmm. And he was absolutely opposed to nicotine replacement in any shape or form. And I know he would oppose these vapes. I don't know anymore, because I only see the argument as tobacco or vapes, and vapes would still seem to be preferable to tobacco. Yeah. What should I take your point on price, but any other thing the government should be looking at? Because the disposable vape thing seems an environmental issue rather than a health issue, per se.
Yeah, agreed. And I think there's not a great deal of evidence that nicotine is intrinsically bad. The issue is it is hyper-addictive. Now, it's not being melodramatic to say that it is addictive as cocaine and heroin. I can't remember who said it, that, you know, giving up cigarettes is easy. I tried it 1,000 times.
Yes.
But what it does is, within seconds, it gets into the brain. Nicotine gets into the brain. It reaches the dopamine and triggers dopamine, which is our pleasure thing. The more we're attracted to it. If you're the cardinal sign of addiction to vapes or to cigarettes, is the first vape, the first cigarette is the most important, because it's the gateway drug, if you will. So if we were targeting the chemicals within targeting nicotine, we got rid of diacetyl. All of those things, that might start changing. And also, by the way, less flavours. Just get rid of the flavours. One thing New Zealand did very well, and if they've changed it, then Anna will notice, is they are looking to ban the vape shops within a kilometre of a school.
Yeah. Australia's gone much, much further by sticking them in pharmacies, which is something perhaps for us to reflect on. Brian Dolan, another really interesting conversation. Thank you. So I'll be over to you after the break. I'll be fascinated to hear what you think. Are you a vapor? Are you bothered at all by the disposable ban? Are you cynical about, you know, why they seem to miss this point about non-refillable vapes, and that they can still be disposed. 0345 6060 973, the number, whatever you want to say. First, though, it's over to Dominic Ellis for the latest LBC News headlines.
Three people have died after a car crashed on the M5 in South Gloucestershire last night. The Defence Secretary John Healey says he has no doubt that military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. And President Trump has announced he'll double steel and aluminium import tariffs to 50% from Wednesday. LBC weather, showers continuing for northwestern areas, dry and sunny elsewhere, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel. It's because a lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed and there are delays on the approach. And also delays anti-clockwise at junction 24 at Potter's Bar from 25 at the A10. And that was after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. Also problems in King's Cross on the King's Cross Road eastbound. It's currently blocked at the Pentonville Road junction and that's because of an accident. And also the A40 remains closed westbound from the Marylebone flyover to the northern roundabout, and that's for the weekend works. In central London, do expect delays. The major general's review's taking place, and it means that lots of roads in Piccadilly are closed.
This is LBC.
Save up to 50% in the Dunelm sale.
Don't miss huge savings on thousands of products like bedding, rugs, home accessories, curtains, and far too many things to mention. Save up to 50% in store and online now, with free click and collect in as little as 2 hours at Dunelm.
The home of homes.
T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Looking for a fun-filled day out this spring? The O2 has it all. Catch the latest blockbuster at Cineworld or challenge your friends with interactive football at Toker Social. Take on darts, mini golf and more at Boom Battle Bar. Get active with a game of paddle tennis, climb to new heights or take flight with an indoor skydive at iFly. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavours from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Matthew Wright on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Vapes were intended as aids for giving up smoking, not as recreational in their own right, says John. They should only be available from pharmacists or on a doctor's prescription for people trying to give up smoking. Flavoured vapes should be banned altogether. Sweet flavoured vapes, so obviously aimed at children. And then Dave counters, before we wish we were like Australia for smoking and vaping, we need to ask ourselves if we also want the criminal gang takeover of the tobacco industry that Australia's seen. Legitimate tobacconist shops all over Australia have been taken over by gangs and are selling illegal cigarettes from what seem like legitimate stores. The gangs approach the stores, demand the keys, and if they refuse, they then burn the store. This is all fueled by a government putting up prices so high that the black market has rocketed. And I have to say, I mean, I am aware of people selling illegal tobacco on the streets of Britain, presumably because the costs of legitimate tobacco are so high. So I think Dave is right to give us a warning. What does Dee have to say up in Leicester? Good morning to you, Dee. Morning, Dee.
Yeah, good, good. All right, so I'm a retailer with a set of stores that we sell vape as okay. Well. And there's a few myths going around.
I should say so, yeah.
The single ban use was more for the environment, which is a positive thing. Yeah, totally positive. Everything that's going to be sold from tomorrow is rechargeable and refillable.
Right.
And it's clearly written on the packaging. And the customer will learn because the price of a single to the new version is nearly double the price.
Okay.
That's the first thing. So, you know, common sense will say, hold on, why is it suddenly now double the price? And then the education from the retailer goes to the customer, by the way, it's rechargeable. So that's your first point for me. Second point is, you know, the benefits of vaping, we all have different outcomes. So one person will see the benefits, one person may not. So, yet again, it's individual opposed to a global thing. It's bad for your health or not as good or it's brilliant. So I think everyone has a different outcome of that type of health challenge. The other bit around the rogue traders, £200 fine is absolutely nothing.
Agreed.
It needs to be £20,000, yeah. And then a threat of prisons. Well, we can't even get criminals into prison. Rogue traders.
We did have a laugh here at the LBC team and me at 5 o'clock this morning where we said, "What, we're going to push the murderers and the rapists out who already look like they're going to be freed in 5 minutes to make way for the vape news agents and such like." I mean, it does seem ridiculous. And I think you're right that the law does seem to be focused on, or the main purpose of the law does seem to be environmental here. Do you think vapes are a good thing by and large, preferable to tobacco?
Like I said, everyone has a different experience. I smoke myself, fags. I can't vape. It doesn't suit me. Right, it doesn't work for me. So I think you can't just
put it. I'm going to have to love and leave you. I think we're going to try and get you back because you're starting to Dalek on us, which is most annoying because it was interesting stuff hearing it from a retailer's point of view. I mean, a £200 fine does sound completely Mickey Mouse to me. Now, talking about money, I did mention in the newspapers the happy news. Caveat happy news, that National Westminster Bank, which was taken over by the taxpayer some 17 years ago at the height of the financial crisis of 2008, is back in private hands. It's no longer owned by us, the taxpayer, in any shape or form. Hurrah, I hear you say. Well, unlike the Lloyds sale back to privatisation, which earned a private profit of just under £1 billion, £900 million, the privatisation of NatWest, the full privatisation, which includes the Royal Bank of Scotland, of course, famously headed by Fred the Shed, who's struggling by only 600 grand a year pension, apparently. We're suffering a £10.5 billion loss with the privatisation of NatWest, and I just wondered why. So I'm delighted that we've got Oliver Lewis on the line, British public policy failure researcher at the University of Oxford, and a former HSBC and NatWest employee as well. Maybe a radical banker, we'll find out in a moment. Good morning to you, Oliver.
Morning, Matthew.
Yeah, we've been talking about radical middle classes and whether bankers may be leading the next revolution, but I'll come to that in time.
But maybe that's me.
Tell us about, I struggle sometimes with big financial stories. Why is the taxpayer so massively out of pocket with NatWest?
Well, the major point here is the fact that RBS was so big. Obviously, RBS was renamed NatWest, but it was RBS, the organisation. It was RBS, you mentioned Fred, the Shred Goodwin. He was allowed by Gordon Brown to take over NatWest back in 1999. A really important moment in the history of the financial crisis because NatWest was about four times as big as RBS. So Gordon Brown approved a much smaller organisation to take over a much bigger one. And the issue there was that it infected NatWest with Fred the Shred's toxicity and his toxic style of management, which then blew up with RBS. You might remember ABN AMRO. He was a megalomaniac, wants to take over the world. Briefly, RBS was the world's largest bank by assets. Big, big deal. And of course, the UK government can't allow any bank to fail. There's something called credit creation. So in effect, every bank's loan is another bank's deposit. So you can't let any single bank fail.
Or the whole system goes down.
System. So that's the method of the madness. It does surprise me, now that NatWest is profitable again, I have to say it does surprise me that the government have sold the final tranche of shares because, of course, every year the shares are retained, the dividend comes in and NatWest is now paying a dividend, quite a healthy dividend, actually.
So I am surprised. Can you rationalise it for me? Because I just don't get it.
Well, I know handful of sort of government insiders and Whitehall people. I think, to be honest, the UK government has been so scarred by the financial crisis and the bailout and the long-run economic consequences, of it, they just want to wash their hands of it. They just want to forget about it. The UK government's quite good at this. They tend to just forget about massive cock-ups that we all end up paying for decades.
I'm just going to tell my editor, in case he hasn't picked out, yeah, I think Oliver is a middle-class radical. Yes, he is.
Doing my bit.
I must ask, because you're saying this government is keen to wash its hands of the whole affair, and I'm minded to agree. We've had sort of the reversal of bankers' bonuses and the concern that banking was all out of control. And so, I mean, could it all happen again? I mean, that's back at the time, our greatest concern was, God, we never want to go through a financial crisis like this again. And yet, I do wonder whether we're slightly slipping.
I mean, Northern Rock, obviously another baddie of the banking system, which again was appallingly managed, appallingly led. Just before the financial crisis began, they were offering mortgages of 125%. So not only would you get a mortgage to buy the house, but you'd get 25% on top of it. I mean, absolutely crazy and unsustainable. And I think the first 100% mortgage has just been announced, maybe by Barclays. Yes. I'm sure I saw a headline somewhere. Yeah. So people do forget. The problem is, I am a historian. You know, it's what I do at Oxford. We have such short institutional memory in this country. It's unreal. So bad ideas tend to get recycled. But one thing my research is trying to do is let's reintroduce institutional memory into government so that we can remember when something real cock-up has happened in the past and how to avoid it.
I probably shouldn't ask as time is short, but I am really intrigued. Accident or design, short memories of financial cock-ups. Is the system there designed to foster short-term memory, or is it just accidental that we genuinely forget?
Well, I think the biggest issue we have is the quality of human capital in government. So I'm a big advocate for the Singaporean approach, even France. France has a really rigorous system for selecting their senior administrators and their politicians. So if we can try to emulate Singapore and France is obviously our nearest neighbour, so it's not that difficult to do, things would change. You know, the number of senior politicians, civil servants, retired civil servants I meet, and it's quite clear, you know, they just don't even have the bare bones of recent historical memory. It's shocking.
I completely agree, Oliver. Oliver Lewis, pleasure talking to you. Maybe something we can explore at length. I was saying, looking at my producer in a future programme, because, you know, you imagine your job is public policy failure researcher. The lessons that the knowledge that Oliver has acquired through his study of public policy failure. And yet, as he says, so many of our politicians have no clue. I shall be returning to your thoughts on vaping versus smoking and the crackdown on disposable vapes after we return to Dominic Ellis for the latest LBC News headlines.
Two adults and a teenager have died after a car crash on the M5 in South Gloucestershire. Police say a white BMW left the northbound carriageway between Junction 14 and the Michael Wood services last night. The Defence Secretary John Healey says he has no doubt the UK military spending will reach 3% of national income by 2034. The government's previously said that level will only be reached if economic conditions allow. And President Trump says he'll double tariffs on steel and aluminium imports to the US to 50% on Wednesday. Mr. Trump told a rally overnight the change will protect the American steel industry. LBC weather, showers in northern England and Wales before clearing later, dry with sunny spells elsewhere, highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Oh, no.
In the time it takes to unsend a risky text, you could find out if you're one of the Jaguar or Land Rover owners that's owed compensation. Visit claimsforcars.com. Answer a few easy questions and you'll find out in seconds. If your car has a faulty DPF filter, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis.
Phew.
Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about pension credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for pension credit on gov.uk. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Little Plus Fruity Super Spin. Simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6th, 25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
This is LBC. Message Matthew Wright on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60973.
A couple of interesting thoughts from Gary's. Gary number one says that the problem with too much regulation over vaping is it results in bad quality liquid and extremely dangerous machines. Like, this caught my eye because he says anybody can make their own vape, but not everyone can make their own vape safely. High voltage, fire risks being the big problem. The technology can't be uninvented. In one form or another, it's here to stay. The only thing that can be really done is to educate, regulate and produce sustainably and responsibly. Yeah, I'm being blown in the wind with this, but that seems to make perfect sense to me. And the other Gary we've got is on the line in Sheffield. Good morning to you, Gary.
Morning, Matthew.
Morning. Are you a vapor?
Yeah. Yes, I am, mate. Sadly, I was a smoker for 40 years from being a kid. Right. And I converted about 6-7 years ago to vaping, and I enjoy it. It's kept me off cigarettes and... it's my go-to for the nicotine hits.
No cigarettes at all since you've been on the vapes?
Not touched one since, no.
Good for you.
And I enjoy it, Matthew. I think there's an immediate reaction and a bit of a continuous assault on the vapers. If they just allowed them to be sold in licensed and registered vape shops where there was on production of the relevant ID, age ID, then I don't see a problem. I like the fruit-flavoured menthol vaping.
Do you use disposables or...?
No.
Right.
Not very chargeable ones. I do no harm to anybody. I'm relatively fit and healthy for 60-odd years old. Your hands off my vapes, please.
I don't have anything critical or anything critical to say at all, Gary. I'm really pleased that you're not smoking tobacco after 40 years of doing that. And I don't want vapes to be harder for you to get hold of. I mean, when you say vape shops, I mean, Australia's moved to pharmacies. Is there... I mean, I think pharmacies have probably got plenty to do already without dealing with queues of nicotine fiends. But is that a good idea, do you think, chemists?
Potentially, Matthew, but the Treasury must take quite a bit of tax from these vape shops. There's quite a lot of them now. They're very popular.
Yeah.
And they're providing quite a lot of jobs for people too. So taking them away is just causing them all down for pharmacies that have got a big industry anyway. Yeah. I'm not sure that's a good move.
And can I ask as well... I should make clear, because I think some people think when I said Alan Carr is dead, I was talking about the comic Alan Carr. No, I'm talking about the guy who was arguably more famous than young Alan Carr before young Alan Carr was born, and that the smoking cessation guru. And he was vehemently opposed to any kind of nicotine replacement, because he says you are still addicted to the drug, and the drug is actually easy to get off if you kind of apply yourself. Would you like, Gary... would you like to be vape-free, nicotine-free? And if so, is the vape getting in the way of that?
I partly agree with that, Matthew, to be honest. I think it is a drug and it gets hold of you. I think I'm a nicotine addict for life. But in relation to cigarettes, it's far, far better. Yeah. I've seen no deterioration in my health or fitness over these last 6-7 years since I've been vaping. And I enjoy it when I'm having a drink or when I'm playing golf or when I'm just relaxing watching TV, just a quick puff and I get the hit, no doubt. And look, I probably am an addict, but is a harmful one in relation to stalking.
You're being very fair and reasonable, and I have no criticism of what you're doing. So I just want to... So I got off cigarettes in the end. I read the book about, I think it was 11 times before I finally sort of had enough and stopped. And I'm really, really pleased that I'm no longer hooked on nicotine. The idea of being on the vape, having a nicotine, I get it. It's still better than being on cigarettes. But I would say, trying not to sound arrogant or smug about it, but it would be a better place for you to be, not to be on vapes. And the trouble is that the vapes are perhaps more socially acceptable. They are but almost certainly healthier than tobacco. And so the argument for getting off them sort of dissolves somewhat. It's not such a priority. So you're trapped on the vapes because it's easy, convenient, and not as bad as smoking.
If I put my hands up, Matthew, and I'm completely honest, I agree with you. I think you're right. And if I could, I would maybe opt for nothing at all. But I think I'm a bit of an addictive personality. I'm the same with chocolate. I can't stop that. That's a lifetime addiction too.
I really don't want to be sounding uncriticized. I'm just floating out there, and I hear your comeback completely, and I'm not going to argue with that. I get it, and thank you for the call, and thank you for being so fair and candid. Appreciate it, Gary in Sheffield. Thank you. More of your thoughts to come in just a moment. But this story, I mean, this next story is about care and the value of unpaid care, and as you're probably aware, politicians from both Labour and Tory governments have kicked the issue of care endlessly down into the long grass, to the point where we are now, as a nation, entirely reliant, I would suggest, on unpaid carers. The trouble is, as I've said very often on this show, when you give somebody something for free, we end up perceiving it as having little or no value. That's why people miss millions of NHS appointments, because they think it's free. They don't think they're paying £2,000 a year for it out of their taxes. So we should be indebted, I think, to Carers UK, who have gone public with some figures from the Office of National Statistics that put a value on unpaid care at £184 billion a year, which is, I think off the top of my head, the same as the budget for running the entire NHS. So, in one sense, I think it gives us an insight as to why politicians keep kicking this problem into the long grass, because it's a huge sum of money that people are giving for free. But for those of us who are socially minded, things have to change. We can't just keep exploiting people who are looking after their nearest and dearest because they have to. I'm joined by Helen Walker, Chief Exec of Carers UK. Good morning to you, Helen.
Good morning.
It is about the same as the NHS budget, isn't it? 184.
That's right, yeah. It's about the equivalent of the NHS budget, yeah.
Which, for even a simpleton like myself, gives us some idea of the scale of the challenge.
Yeah, it's a huge sum of money. And you know, people often, you know, not always, want to care for the person that they're looking after. But we need more help and support. So the campaign that we're running at Carers UK alongside Specsavers Home Visit is to kind of, you know, really shine a light on the huge value of care. So we've created this portrait with Colin Davidson, and we've called it the most valuable portrait. And it's got a symbolic value of £184 billion. And it's of an unpaid carer, JC. And Colin met with lots of carers, understood all their different stories. And it's on show on the South Bank this weekend. So if you're down on the South Bank, it's in this Perspex box. It's an extraordinary painting. I can't describe it. I saw it for the first time on Thursday. And it just, in the eyes, you can see, you know, the challenge, the pain, the extraordinary joy at times. It's an amazing, and I really hope it's going to raise the profile of care in this country.
Now, forgive me if I rain on your parade just a little, but I mean, Theresa May made she really did try to some point, possibly more than anybody since, to deal with care, and got nowhere. We have, as a country, singularly failed to address the problems of care. The amount of money you can see the government is saving gives us, I think, some insight as to why successive governments have been reluctant to go to the taxpayer. It's a picture, it's a painting, a wonderful, brilliant, emotive painting that's so symbolic. Is that going to penetrate the politicians' minds better than grim reality?
I mean, they're two separate issues. The first is about recognition. Okay, so it takes on average 2 years to recognise yourself as a carer. 2 years where you're not getting what help and support is available to you. So I mean, part of this campaign that we're doing with Spectators Home Visit is just to raise the profile of unpaid carers so that they themselves recognise that that's what they're doing. They're not just a son or a daughter or a mum or a sister, but they are an unpaid carer and they can get what help's available. The issue of care is a whole other one, and you're absolutely right. Nobody has addressed it. So we've got, from this government, the Casey Review into Social Care. Now, that has kicked off. We know what the remit of it is. It's not going to report back until 2028. I think we can all say that that is too long to kick it into the long grass again, without a shadow of a doubt. There will be an interim report this time next year, so we'll see whether there's any recommendations from that that will make it better. There is a 10-year plan for the NHS in process, which should be released this summer. Our goal, and we've worked incredibly hard to do this, is to get carers through that like a stick of rock, because that's the one place that every carer will go, isn't it, with the person that they care for.
I think it's a sort of absolute no-brainer that not dealing with care is making the NHS buckle and bend at every turn. So
unpaid carers are propping up both the health and social care system without shadow of a doubt. And that's why this figure, this symbolic value of this painting, £184 billion, it's just to raise that profile. It's just to make people stop and think, this is what's happening in this country. And, you're right. I mean, it's a nice thing to do, but I hope what it will do is help people recognise that that's what they're doing and get the help that is available. And there is help available for unpaid carers, and some people choose to do that. Not everybody, but some people do.
I have to say, I will take away from this conversation that line you said about it takes 2 years for people to even recognise that they are actually carers. And within my own circle, that certainly rings true. Helen Walker, I wish you all the very best, not just with that campaign, but also with getting somebody in government to recognise we really need to get a handle on care. Helen Walker there, Chief Exec of Carers UK. You're listening to Matthew Wright on LBC. The time's 9:46. Let's go over to Dominic Ellis for the latest LBC News headlines.
Two adults and a teenager have died after a car crash on the M5 in South Gloucestershire. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, says he's got no doubt that military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. And President Trump's announced that he'll double steel and aluminium import tariffs to 50% from Wednesday. LBC weather, showers continuing in northwestern areas, dry and sunny elsewhere, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held again on the M25 anti-clockwise just before Junction 24 at Potter's Bar. This is another accident on that stretch, and there are delays back to Junction 25 at the A10. Also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues to the Dartford Tunnel. A lorry's broken down just before the tunnel, and there are queues on the approach. Just off the M25 at Junction 28, there are restrictions on the Brook Street roundabout, the roundabout with the A12. That's because of the weekend works. On the North Circular Road, there are southbound queues to the A12 junction, and that's because of an accident. The exit slip road to the Redbridge roundabout is closed, and only one Woolwich ferry running today, and that's all down to a technical problem.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Matt Fry.
The US and China, the two global giants, are bracing for trade war and possibly real war, but is conflict inevitable?
Matt Fry on LBC.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies, and ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today, because OK Hearing is not okay.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
With Little Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6/25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
At Wickes, save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £23, now £15. Feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
Discover outlet shopping at the O2 this spring. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Kate Spade, The Cosmetics Company Store, Le Creuset, and more. And with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, climbing, interactive football, mini golf, paddle tennis, and indoor skydiving, why not stay for the day? Visit us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 and plan your trip today.
Leading Britain's conversation with Matthew Wright. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Talking about the government's crackdown on disposable vapes, and there's a sizable number of messages are coming out, and I mean, this one's anonymous, but we've heard it already. Banned things and black market will provide replacement full of worse chemicals than original. Young people have to be responsible for their own well-being. I mean, this message coming through that restricting the sale of vapes is sort of manner to organised crime. Who will sell dodgy vapes? And I think I do have to take that element of this argument on board. Anthony's on the line in Ashford. Good morning, Ashford. Sorry, I should say good morning to you, sir.
That's it. Good morning, Matthew. Yes. Well, the rationale behind this ban was initially that these products were tilted at children.
Yes.
For these fancy flavours, you know, bubblegum, blueberry. I haven't got a clue why anyone wants to smoke this, because you can get these little vaporizers. You want to inhale blueberry, get yourself a little one of those Zen machines that puffs out sort of vapour, like an air freshener.
See, I don't understand. So when my friend's daughter was pre-teen, she was vaping non-nicotine flavours, presumably because she wanted to look grown up, and I flash back to when I was her age and my newsagent would sell us individual cigarettes next to the bus stop, which we could have on the top deck on the way home. And I'm thinking, much better off having a nicotine-free flavoured vape. That seemed, if children want to imitate adults. And thereafter, and this is like 15 years ago, thereafter the whole thing's just exploded. And I can't see the wood for the trees. So many people are messaging saying if it wasn't for vapes, they would be smoking tobacco. Many people saying that if we restrict vapes, we open the door to organised crime. I'm kind of at a loss as to what we should be doing.
Well, I don't quite buy this argument. If B, A, then B. You know, as you said, it literally has exploded. And we know many of these units do actually literally explode, these rechargeable things. So this is perhaps a stage one. And it's a good thing that it's been a cross-party issue. They've carried this legislation over. You know, years ago, they used to sell tobacco that was sweet, like sweeties, little bits of coconuts all shredded up. And
sweet cigarettes. Sweet. Yes, I used to quite like them, and then I became a smoker. I wonder if the two events are in any way connected.
That's it.
I mean, it does. It's like you said. It normalizes the process. Anthony, thank you. Let's go to David in Kilmarnock. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Matthew. Love the show.
Thank you. Give me some wisdom on vapes.
Vapes, extremely addictive. Definitely not healthy. Not as unhealthy as cigarettes, but definitely unhealthy. I was fit, very fit. I was doing 10K a day. I was working in construction. I lost my mum to cancer.
I'm sorry.
Which was due to cigarettes. And I vaped. I started vaping to deal with the grief.
How old were you when you started vaping?
Oh, God. Let me think. I'm 51 now, it was 13 years ago, so 38.
There's not many, as our guest said at the beginning of the hour, there's not many sentient adults that take up smoking or vaping. I think it's less than 1%. I totally understand your reasons. Very, very difficult time. How did vaping affect your physical exercise?
Oh, I was out of breath really easily. I mean, I couldn't do 10K, even sitting in the back of a bike.
Really?
I definitely, there is no there's nobody that can say that it doesn't affect your health. If they say that, they're lying. It's definitely affected me. My son started it after, unfortunately, I was in an accident when I built a fence and someone hit me with a car. And my son was with me. And unfortunately, I didn't know, but he started vaping then. That was 3 years ago, and now I talk to him about it. We talk about trying to come off, and he says as well, he's 22 now, and he says he's really unfit, and he knows it's down to the vaping. I personally feel like if they upped the price and didn't make the vapes look like they're, you're buying a packet of chewing gum, they maybe put some kind of health
so then I just immediately feel conflicted that if we make the vapes too expensive, and I don't know where the price point is, they're going to end up being more expensive than illegal tobacco you can buy from dodgy people on the street.
And that's true. We're
going to end up with children potentially going back onto the wicked weed, which is, I think I would still rather a child was vaping than smoking tobacco. So they're just raising the price could drive children to cigarettes, and that's not what any of us want, right?
That's definitely a concern. Yes, it's a difficult to find the balance where you can try and make it less appealing.
I'm also trying to
help with the health side of it.
You see, I'm fascinated by what you said. Both you and your son have had conversations about stopping, quitting it altogether. And I think it was Gary I was talking to, and we had a sort of similar line that in many ways, being on a vape, I think psychologically, might be harder to stop than tobacco because you're thinking it's not as bad as tobacco, that it's less dangerous, and therefore the burden on you to stop is somewhat diminished. It's the healthier option. It's still the same drug, and so the withdrawal and getting over it is no different from tobacco, but the psychological frame of mind the vapor has, I think, is different from a tobacco smoker because you think it's the healthier option.
Yeah, I mean, at 17, I started smoking. I realized it wasn't a great idea at about 21. So I did stop. I was actually one of the first in my county to take the tablets.
Right, okay, the Zyban, was it? Don't recommend them, but it did set me on the path to quitting in the end. David, pleasure talking to you. Wish you all the best. I have a funny feeling you are going to stop. Let's go to Graham in Bradford. Morning to you, sir.
Oh, hello, Matthew. Well, I'm 62 and I have paranoid schizophrenia. I've tried to quit 9 times. The longest I quit for was 4 years, which was very good.
That's great.
But, yeah, the single-use vapes are the only type of vape I can use, unfortunately. I've tried running the pipe several times and the refillable ones, and I can't do it. I get the juice all over the place. So I've built a stash up of £200 worth of the single-use ones. And when they run out, because they're all legal ones, I've been buying any illegal ones. When they run out, I don't know what I'll do, Matthew. I'll probably go back to the Snide Sigs that you can get round here at £3 a packet, you know.
So, that information kind of confirms what I've just been saying. We've got to be careful with pricing vapes, that if the price gets too high, we're just going to push people straight into the arms of your dodgy tobacco dealer.
Yeah, I find it hard to run a pipe. Unless they've got one that's really simple to use, and I'll have to go and investigate this when my legal disposable ones run out. Unless they've got an idiot-proof one, I think I'll have to go back to the Sigs.
Now, you say that, and I'm going to try and end on a nice positive note here. You stopped for 4 years. The late Alan Carr, the smoking cessation guru, said every smoker stops every time they stub a cigarette out. The question is, why do you restart? If you've stopped for 4 years, you would have had a good time. You'd have been feeling healthy and feeling good about yourself. If you've done it once, you can do it again, Graham, can't you?
Yeah, but it's your mental health. As soon as you have a breakdown or a crisis, the nearest thing you grab is a cigarette mafia, unfortunately.
I have noticed, and I do agree, but I wish you all the best. If you've done it once, Graham, you've done it four times. I did it 11 times, but got there in the end. Don't give up on giving up. Graham, pleasure talking to you. Fascinating morning's conversation. I've been really impressed by your contributions this morning. Well done, everyone. I'll be back tomorrow morning from 7 if you fancy
to get praise from you. Matthew, you're so generous with your praise.
I just felt they deserve it.
I'm going to take a leaf out of that book.
They really do deserve it.
They so do. I mean, the porridge of Matthew Wright, exactly.
Now, I'll be back tomorrow morning from 7 for more kind radio. If you missed any of today's show, you can catch up on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app, which you can download for free from your app store now. Coming up at 12 on LBC, it's Ali Mirish. But who on earth could it be? No, it is Matt Fry. Morning, Matt.
Good morning, Matthew. Wonderful to see you. I'm afraid a sobering diet for me. The threat of war in Asia, the reality of war in Europe, the trade version of it everywhere else. The future of global trade currently depends on a tussle between the American courts and the American president, who last night lashed out and doubled steel tariffs to 50%. Just like that. What does all this impulsivity do to trade and trade deals like ours? Meanwhile, speaking in Singapore a few hours ago, Trump's defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, issued a square-jawed threat to China not to mess militarily with Asia, and that includes Taiwan. But did he go any further than his predecessors? We'll get reaction from Beijing. And for light relief, should our kids learn much more about AI?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, two adults and a teenager.